BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Now, before we get started, I just want to warn that I'm a comedian, I'm not an expert. This podcast series is my personal take on the drug scene in the UK. And because of that, there will be some very strong language and some discussion of drug taking along the way as well. I'm going to be talking from my own perspective as someone who's grown up around drugs, who's taken drugs recreationally, who's even known people to have died from taking drugs. And I'm going to be talking to some experts who'll be giving their views and their own personal opinions on these issues, but it is up to you to make up your own mind on where you stand on everything we discuss. Now, of course, not everyone in the UK is taking drugs. According to the Home Office, around 1 in 5 people aged 16 to 24 and around 1 in 11 people aged 16 to 59 took drugs in the last year. So it is probably something we should be speaking about. Anyway, let's get going.
I always think we've often done drugs the wrong way around.
I don't know, because I've never done them with us a lot, so I don't know how anyone else does.
What do you mean?
Because like... I think this is where we go wrong a lot of the time, is we don't do it, like, as a pre-drink.
Oh,
it's not
right,
as if
yeah.
we do it at, like... Or, like, looking back at, like, the old days, right, we'd never do it at, like, 8 o'clock
no.
before going to a pub or a club.
Which is really sensible.
Yeah. We'd always... I remember what we always used to do was 2 bottles of wine for a fiver, vomit on the way into town, and then at, like, midnight, we'd be like, right, let's pick up.
Yeah. Pick up to sober up a bit.
But we'd pick up at, like, 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then we'd be surprised that it went on until, like, the next day. Yeah. Welcome to Jacob Hawley on Drugs. My name's Jacob Hawley. I make a living from drugs, which is to say that I'm a comedian who goes around the country doing jokes about drugs.
And we all know what ketamine is originally.
Don't you think that's fun?
That means at some point someone must have looked at a tranquilized horse and gone, I love what he's having. You've got to have rules, right? You've got to have rules with your drug taking, right? Otherwise, it can go too far. Like, I've got rules. I only do drugs that I do with my nose. I only do drugs that I would snort with my nose. I've got a big nose. I might as well fucking use it, right? I don't do drugs that I'd have to inject into my veins because I've got standards. I don't do drugs that I'd have to smoke because I've got asthma.
So I've consumed drugs since I was a teenager. I've grown up around people who've lost their lives to drugs. I've lived with drug addicts. Recreational drugs have been a big part of my life. And now that affects my work. I write shows about my own personal drug use. But this podcast is going to be a bit more than that. What I want to do with this is look at the bigger picture about how drug culture affects all part of British culture. And to do that, I want to talk to people, influential people, who've had drugs involved in their lives as well. So drug dealers, to lawmakers, to scientists, to the families of people who've lost their lives to drugs. And the point of that is that I want to speak to these people and learn their story, learn how drugs have affected their lives, to try and get a better understanding of drug culture. So to kick things off, we're going to be talking to people about the subject of legalisation. Right? The legalisation of drugs is a topic you can't avoid. Whenever you try and speak to anyone about drugs, it's one of the first things that comes up. Personally, I don't really have an opinion on legalisation. I mean, the legality of drugs has never really put me off. I mean, me and my mates have been taking drugs for years and we've never really worried about it.
Yeah, to be honest, I've never really thought about it. It's not really on my radar. I think it's like, yeah, do what you want. I'm sure that'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'll go along with it.
Yeah.
If everyone's doing it, though, and you can make a positive on it, why not do it? I think legalise weed and then pay for the NHS with that, and then you can control it. People aren't going to smoke it any more than they would have anyway, and if they do, it's better because it's monitored. It's not going to happen unless, like, someone really, like, left and liberal gets into power, which isn't going to happen for a long time.
All right, Boris.
So me and my mates don't really know what we're talking about, so I wanted to go and speak to someone who does, right? Someone who's done a bit of research on the topic. So what I did, I went and spoke to a friend of mine. He's another comedian. He actually did a show about legalisation at the Edinburgh Fringe a couple of years ago. So we're kicking things off with Mr Jack Barry.
In 2017, I saw you walking around Edinburgh wearing a suit which had cannabis leaves on it.
The weed suit.
The weed suit. How did that work?
It went down pretty well. I think it worked as a promotional tool. Lots of people thought I was dealing. I would have had to be like the ballsiest drug dealer in Edinburgh, just like hiding in plain sight.
Yeah. I did actually have audience members coming up to me afterwards, like, say something about the show and then go, by the way, are you selling
stuff? I had that too.
Did you?
Like, that was my merchandise. Like, I thought that's what I should have had, like little baggies with my face on. Like, thanks for coming to see the show. And then, you know, people later on would be doing a key out of their bag and they'd be like, who's that on the bag? And they'd be like, that's Jack Barry. You've got to see the show. I had a great month doing it, but it definitely felt a bit like I was just a couple of years too early doing a show about drugs.
Really? What do you mean?
We're still a bit weird about drugs in this country. Like, in even in like the States, like, you know, obviously they're starting to legalize recreational weed in like lots of states now. In this country, I still think we're a bit like uptight about like drug taking.
Yeah.
Even though so many people do it publicly, I think people are still a bit weird about it.
Did you get anyone who openly like criticized the content of it?
Not like during the show, but like in the street, I found like flyering for it. I'd be like, come see my show, it's all about why drugs should be legal. And then people would be like, oh, you're a stoner. Like it's some kind of slur.
Yeah.
But I think it's good that now people are talking about it a bit more. That's my main thing.
Do you think like in the last few years there has been a change in like public perception towards it?
I think so, slowly. I mean, obviously, there's been, like, the relaxing on, like, the medicinal marijuana laws in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And so now, I think maybe we're sort of slowly starting to look at it a bit more.
Yeah.
But I still think we're a long way off.
Yeah.
Any sort of, like, real serious even discussion about it.
Yeah.
About, like, you know, how prohibition and banning drugs makes it more dangerous for everybody. And just as a policy, doesn't work. Banning things doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, there's been, obviously, like, a slight shift in terms of certain states for America legalizing cannabis. Portugal, is it just cannabis in Portugal? Is it everything?
In Portugal, everything is decriminalized, but it's not legal to sell it or buy it.
Right, okay.
They won't arrest you, they won't throw you in prison, but they will recommend that you go to like Narcotics Anonymous or like counseling. And so basically, they poured all the money that they've spent on trying to catch people who are using drugs. They've spent it on like rehabilitation and stuff like that. And in the 10 years since they've been doing that, the drug deaths in Portugal have halved. And so, yeah. And so that's what I find baffling. It's like a lot of these drug laws, they're not wild speculation. And like you said before about where the money's going, you know, we make a lot of money from taxing alcohol. Cocaine currently costs the health system stuff anyway, like drugs, illegal drugs. People are still having to go to counselling. We're imprisoning people. They're having to go to the NHS because they're addicted or because they've overdosed or whatever. So we're paying the costs for drugs, but we're not getting any of the tax benefits. Yeah. Every time I smoke a joint, I think that could build a hospital. I think, you know, I'll do a line of coke, and I think that could build a school if we were taxing it and spending the money instead of it going to the gangs.
Yeah.
You know, we could be making money from it. And the politician's like, there's no such thing as a magic money tree. Yes, there is. It's a weed plant. It literally grows money. Like in Colorado, they made $1 billion in the first year of legalization of just tax. It's there already. Like people are already smoking weed in this country, but we're just saying no to the tax money.
So that was Jack. I love talking to Jack. And I think we've got similar kind of experiences on drugs. And I think, you know, it's very easy to sit in another comedian's kitchen who's of a similar age group to me, who's got similar experience to me, and to talk about legalisation and to just sit there agreeing about it. So I think the next thing for me to do was to talk to someone who's, again, got proper research on this matter, to get out of my own echo chamber and basically talk to a grown-up.
In only 6 months, we reckoned, actually, public opinion will have swung quite significantly in favour of legalisation.
That's Lizzie McCulloch, Director of Policy for VaultFast. Now, VaultFast are an independent cross-party organisation who aim to inform the public debate around drugs. You introduced a survey in 2018 around the legalisation of drugs.
Yes.
Yeah. First of all, who was polled? Who did you ask?
Everyone. It was a nationally representative poll of 18 plus.
And then the question that was asked was, are you...
It was, generally speaking, to what extent do you support or oppose the legalisation of cannabis in the UK? So in May 2018, 43% of the British public supported it. In October 2018, 59% of the British public supported it.
So we went from 43% to 59?
Yeah.
In
5-6 months.
Wow.
That's significant.
That's really significant.
Yeah, same question.
That's mad.
I know.
So one summer
has
made people want to legalise cannabis.
And it's because so much happened during that summer.
What influenced that? What made people change their mind?
It was the Billy Caldwell campaign.
12-year-old Billy Caldwell, who suffers from a rare form of epilepsy, was granted permission to be prescribed medicinal cannabis to help control his seizures.
Billy Caldwell, basically, he's a 12-year-old kid living in Ireland, and he was suffering from severe epileptic seizures. And so his mother travelled to Canada to get hold of some medicinal cannabis oil to bring back for him. And she was actually stopped at Heathrow, and the oil was taken off of her.
You know, surely there's a more practical way of doing this, that Billy can be administered his medication at home. Please step up to the plate here and arrange this so my little boy can go home.
Can you see there being a reform on drugs policy?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a question of when. I think the reason why it's going to happen is it's just because of the global shift.
Yeah.
There's more countries legalising medical cannabis. You can just see the way everything is going. And there's a massive industry. Corona have made a massive investment in cannabis-infused beverages.
Have they really?
Yeah.
I mean, there are people listening to this thinking that is the dream, being able to have a sort of cannabis-infused beer on a Friday night. What do you think will happen in future then? We've you know, reports like yours coming out.
Yeah.
Will that affect government policy?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're trying to open up conversations about this. We all need to be talking about this at the moment.
So that was Lizzie. I was genuinely really surprised about her research, about the results of it, about how in one summer, and almost down to one news story, the British public have swung on how they feel about legalising cannabis. And there was another thing that Lizzie said about how, you know, when people talk about drugs regularly, they almost aren't taken seriously. And that kind of leads on to the next person I spoke to.
Before I was sacked, no one had heard of me. After I'm sacked, I'm a public figure.
Professor David Nutt is one of the UK's leading neuroscientists. He suggested that LSD, ecstasy and cannabis were less harmful than alcohol and tobacco.
Now, David is a proper expert on drugs. He's written books about drugs. He's advised the government on their drug policy. He's currently based at Imperial College London doing research there. And he's got a full job title that I can't pronounce.
Professor of Neuropsychopharmacology at Imperial College London?
Well, that's the first question, actually, David. I was actually going to ask if you could say that word, but you obviously can. You can say
I can spell it too. Neuropsychopharmacology.
Absolutely love talking to David. He's going to be acting as our sort of like drugs dictionary corner throughout this podcast. He was actually fired by the British government when he was advising them on drugs policy, which makes him, as well as being the most intelligent person on this podcast, also perhaps the coolest.
Drugs are illegal because it serves the political purpose to have illegal drugs, because that then allows governments to do something and ignore drugs like alcohol and tobacco. And this actually all goes back to prohibition in the US in the 1920s. People were drinking twice as much alcohol as they're drinking today. Alcoholism was destroying families. And America got to the point where they voted to ban alcohol.
Right.
And that was prohibition. And then they discovered the problems with prohibition. Prohibiting something that people like certainly doesn't stop them wanting it. So they've worked out ways of getting it.
Yeah.
How did they get it? They started brewing their own. They started setting up illegal drinking dens called speakeasies. You know, that's where the word cocktail comes from. The stuff they were selling in the speakeasies was hooch.
Yeah.
It tasted disgusting. So people had to make some kind of flavouring to get rid of the taste of the alcohol, and that's how people invented cocktails.
So if you're looking at that prohibition model, in the same way as back then, not only was the alcohol that they were buying disgusting, it was also dangerous.
Yes.
And also by purchasing that alcohol, they were putting funds into criminal organisations.
Exactly.
Right? In exactly the same way now that we're doing with drugs.
Yeah. So this was the first really clear example of how the drug laws create what we call perverse consequences. So we had this illegal market, it's the speakeasies. Who fed that market? The mafia. Organised crime was fuelled by alcohol prohibition. What does organised crime do in order to survive? It buys policemen. So in the 1920s, after a few years of prohibition, every single American policeman was corrupt. So what did they do? Well, they created a separate police force, which they called the Drug Enforcement Agency. They created an army. It's the only country in the world which has a separate army to deal with drugs. And the guy they put in charge was a man called Harry Anslinger. The war was on. The war against alcohol was on. But actually, the general public thought, this is absurd. You know, we've got this huge, we're paying all this tax money to fight a war against a drug we actually want. So in the end, the American Senate voted to repeal prohibition. Alcohol became legal.
Right.
That is Harry sitting there in his office. What am I going to do now? You know, I don't have to fight to protect people against alcohol prohibition because it's been banned. You know, it's a legal drug. How can I keep my job? How can I keep my army? Cannabis. So he created the myth of cannabis. And what he did was really evil because he said, let's call it marijuana, because that's what the Mexicans call it. He created this hysteria about marijuana. He had the newspapers writing articles about how drug-crazed Mexicans were crossing the border and were raping white women and were getting young men intoxicated.
Yeah.
He created this fear of Mexicans, which is kind of a bit reminiscent of what Trump has done today. So things were bad. Anslinger really started the rot. But where the balance really tipped into the insane was under Nixon. The war in Vietnam is going very badly. And his chief aide was a man called John Ehrlichman. And Ehrlichman said, we've got to have another enemy. So we decided to create the war on drugs.
America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse. In order to fight and defeat this enemy, it is necessary to wage a new all-out offensive.
We invented the war on drugs. Why? Because there were two groups in America that we didn't like. We didn't like the hippies, mm-hmm. who were anti-war, and we didn't like black people. But we knew we couldn't make it illegal to be anti-war or black, so what could we do? We decided to attack them for the drugs they use. And then we could vilify them night after night on the evening news. We could disrupt their meetings, enter their homes, arrest them, imprison them for possession of drugs. The epitome of political expediency, using drugs to create a moral panic so that you can get re-elected.
So according to David, it's all President Nixon's fault, and the war on drugs is obviously still being fought in America today. The current president of America had this to say recently.
We're going to build a wall, and we have to build a wall. For people, for gangs, for drugs. The drugs has never been a problem like we have right now. And by the way, like the world has with drugs. And you know what? We fill up these councils. They all want to be on councils where we take Melania. Great, great first lady. She's great. She is great.
Yeah. So David's saying some incredible stuff, right? And I didn't want to question him in the room. You know, David's a smart guy. He's written books. I've never written a book, right? But when he was saying this stuff about how, you know, the DEA in America, they're only created to target certain social groups, the way that they only really exist now because of the fact that it's a criminal offence to consume drugs, and that's the reason that we don't have legalisation in the US. When he was saying all this stuff, I thought, we need to speak to someone actually based in America.
Hello.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi there.
Hey, it's Jacob Hawley. I'm calling. So next up, we've got Kevin Sabbett. Now, Kevin's based in the USA, right? He's an expert on drug policy. He's advised three different US presidencies all on drug policy, and not this current presidency, you know, presidencies with actual credibility.
Well, there are a few things I like better than British comedy, so that's a good thing in my book, not a bad thing. You don't want to hear my impression of all the characters in Little Britain or Come Fly With Me, do you?
I really do. So Kevin was actually advising the Clinton presidency on drugs when he was only 20 years old. So first of all, I wanted to ask him how he actually got into that.
You know, I just started doing stuff and got noticed. You know, I would go to clubs with slide projectors and PowerPoint presentations and postcards with brains on them. And it kind of got noticed.
So one of Kevin's main arguments is that legalization of cannabis would create an addiction for profit model. And I wanted to know more about what that actually means.
Basically, it's the model of the tobacco industry over the last century. Downplay the harms, do your own research, say the research is inconclusive when it's from credible sources, hire paid spokespeople, entice young people, get people to start early, and get it normalized. And that's what we're doing in the United States right now with regards to cannabis in many ways. We are commercializing and normalizing an entirely new industry. What's incredible this time about what we're doing about cannabis is that we are actually letting the tobacco industry in on the money, which is just mind-boggling when you think about the fact that they lied to the really Western world for the last 50 years, and we're now letting them in on the pot industry because they are donating, they are investing. We're letting them do that. It's just incredible to me. So I feel, just if I can back up for a minute, that we have a false dichotomy that you either have to lock people up and criminalize them and never research any drugs for medicinal purposes, or you have to legalize drugs. And that is a total false dichotomy. We should research drugs. You know, there might be some drugs that are controlled that have medicinal uses and components of them are good for medicine. We certainly know there are components of marijuana that could be medicinal. Fine. That's great. Do the research. But you don't have to basically let Philip Morris take over in order to do research or in order.
So Kevin mentions Philip Morris there. If you sat there thinking, who's that, like I was, it's a company, it's like an organisation. They own tobacco companies like Marlboro. They sell tobacco in over 180 countries. So yeah, that's who that is.
I think there's just been this total false dichotomy set up by people. Many of them, by the way, stand to gain from legalization, so they're doing it on purpose. Basically saying the war on drugs is such a problem, and oh my God, we don't have any control. This is terrible. We're locking everybody up. We can't do any research, so therefore we must legalize drugs. Well, if we legalize drugs, we already know what'll happen. We'll create a new global alcohol and tobacco industry. That's really my overall thesis.
It's a really interesting thesis because a lot of people who argue in favour of drug legalisation, they use that as justification. They say that because alcohol is legal, because tobacco is legal, we should legalise cannabis.
That's like saying because my headlights are broken, I think we should bash my taillights too in my car. It's very hard to prohibit something that 80% of people are doing. But with cannabis and cocaine and heroin and MDMA, 80% of people aren't doing it. So we have a chance to sort of shut the door on the industry. Yes, will there be people that use it? Of course. We're not going to have a drug-free world tomorrow. We're not going to have everybody singing Kumbaya, Just Say No with Nancy Reagan. That's not going to happen tomorrow. Fine. We know there will be a certain percentage of people that use. Let's make sure they get help. Let's make sure they don't get HIV or hepatitis. Let's make sure they don't overdose. Let's make sure we don't stigmatize them into the dregs of society and not help them overcome their problem, of course. But let's not promote their problem by allowing an industry, which is exactly what would happen if we legalize drugs.
It feels like what you're hinting towards is that there should be a better education about the dangers of consumption of
substances. There should be better education. You know, I was at a school the other day, and 16-year-olds, very smart. And I talked about the research showing that marijuana, for some people, not everybody, for some people, especially if you're under 18 or really under 25, that it can have an addictive quality, that there are people that are addicted. In fact, the statistics show there are more kids addicted to marijuana than all drugs combined, including alcohol, okay? And when I said that, some kid raised his hand and said, Kevin, you're wrong, Dr. Sabet. I know marijuana is not addictive. And I said, well, how do you know that? And he said, I know that because I use marijuana every single day, so I can tell you it's not addictive. I mean, that is the stuff that we're dealing with. This total misinformation campaign proliferated on the internet, proliferated by celebrities. I mean, God bless Sir Richard Branson and other people who want to say this is no big deal. I mean, the issue is maybe for them it's no big deal. And you know what? Good luck. Have a blast. Smoke weed to your heart's content. You'll die a very happy man. No problem for you. But for some people, especially those that are vulnerable, it will be a big problem, and it will necessitate psychosis and schizophrenia and other problems.
I mean, what some people may respond to that is that a lot of the recreational cannabis that's being consumed is skunk, so like really high-grade stuff. One of the arguments for legalization is that if we have a legalized product, there is then more information on the product, and they might end up being able to consume something that doesn't have that damage on them.
Well, that hasn't happened anywhere in the world. So in Canada or the U.S. or Uruguay, where these things are happening, people are consuming more and more the higher-grade stuff. That's what you want. That's what, by the way, the industry is pushing, because they make more money from the higher-grade stuff. So this idea that, well, if we legalized it, people would use it more safe. Why? Because they'll have more variety and they would go for the low-quality stuff. That's like saying, you know, at the liquor store, the best seller at the liquor store is non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah.
Because it has low percentage. No, it's not. It's the hard liquor. The people gravitate towards that, especially when it's promoted widely, especially when it's so acceptable. So, again, there are a lot of theories out there about legalization. They sound great, but the reality is most of these things are myths. The other myth is that the drug dealers will go away. There has never been a bigger black market for cannabis now than there was from before in the United States after legalization. By the way, guess who's making money from legalization? They're not kids from the ghetto. They're not black and brown kids. They are rich white guys that, frankly, probably a lot of them I went to Oxford with because they were Rhodes Scholars, and now they're making millions and millions in Wall Street and Silicon Valley. So it's actually a very elitist argument to legalize drugs. It's something that will benefit the already rich, the already well-connected. It's not going to benefit the kid in Harlem who's going to say, oh, I'm going to open a pot shop and be a millionaire. It ain't going to happen. It hasn't happened with anything else. It's not going to happen with cannabis or any other drug.
So Dr. Kevin Sabat there, I was genuinely surprised by how much of his points I agreed with. I really thought that a lot of what he says actually makes loads of sense. But before I go out and start protesting against the idea of legalisation, I wanted to go back to someone that I spoke to earlier.
How's it all been going?
Yeah, it's good. So what I did, I bailed up Jack Barry. I went back with a few of Kevin's points. I wanted to hear what Jack had to say about Kevin's thoughts on legalisation. We spoke to David Nutt.
Great.
We spoke to a man called Kevin Sabat, and he is anti-legalisation. I want to get your response to that, if that's cool.
Sounds good.
So one of the arguments for legalisation is that it will make things safer.
Yeah.
Kevin's argument is that given the choice, people would end up buying higher grade stuff anyway, with the example of alcohol. You know, alcohol is legal, but no one chooses to buy 0% alcohol beer.
Sure.
How would you respond to that?
Well, I mean, he's taking that to an extreme. I mean, not many people drink like moonshine. When prohibition of alcohol was in place in the States, you know, most people were brewing moonshine in baths.
Yeah.
That was incredibly dangerous. And if you drank any of it, it could make you go blind.
That's true.
And now we have sort of regulation of alcohol, and most people will drink a lager that is 5% alcohol. And it's like, yeah, obviously not many people are drinking 0% alcohol, because then why drink alcohol at all, you know?
Yeah. The next point that he made, and I think he's got a good point here, is he was saying that if you were to legalise cannabis, for example, it's then put into the hands of organisations and corporations, right? People who don't pay tax, potentially. So how do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, I think whatever way you look at it, surely criminal gangs are worse people to be getting the money than anyone else. I mean, whatever you might think about corporations and their immoral ways of doing business, they don't cut people's heads off and string them up by piano wire over intersections in Juarez in Mexico. So I think most corporations have no sort of moral outlook whatsoever, and I think it's the job of governments to make sure that corporations pay their fair amount of tax and do things socially responsibly. My whole point is that, you know, the way that the country works at the moment is you can get drugs. Drugs are so easy to get a hold of. It's never been easier to get a hold of drugs. You can't get rid of them. You can either bury your head in the sand about a problem and pretend it's not there, in which case it will get worse, or you can acknowledge that it is a thing and try and do it in a safe way. Just telling kids don't do drugs is such a pointless... We all know what reverse psychology is.
Yeah.
You know, if your teacher or your mum tells you never do drugs, then you're going to want to do drugs, aren't you?
So there we have it, man. We've spoken to four well-informed, interesting people on the arguments for and against legalisation. I don't really know whether I feel fully one way or the other. You know, having spoken to Jack and David, I thought that legalisation was definitely the way forward. Having spoken to Kevin, I've got concerns about it. I've got concerns about how that works practically. I've got concerns about how it's actually working in America. So one thing that people do agree on is that what we need to do is talk about these things more, is that education's important and sharing experiences. So that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be speaking to people who've got experiences on drugs that they want to share with us, people who make policies on drugs, people who run clubs, people who use drugs in every different form, whether it be psychedelics, chemsex, people who've suffered from addiction, people who've lost family members to addiction and to drug fatalities. Next time we're going to be talking about one of the realities of drug abuse. I'm going to be talking to recovering drug addicts about the depths that drugs have dragged them to. You know, similar to what Kevin was talking about, how drugs tend to target more vulnerable people. So please subscribe and hopefully we'll see you then. Thank you. There's a reason that so far all I've spoken about is drugs. The BBC have given me a podcast on drugs. As if this career wasn't difficult enough already to explain to my fucking parents. I phoned my mum up the other day and explained it to her. I said, I'm going to start doing this podcast with the BBC about drugs. And she was like, so hang on a minute, darling. You are a comedian that no one's ever heard of, doing a radio show that doesn't go on the radio about how you like to take drugs. I mean, me and your father, we're just so proud of you. If you've been affected by anything that we've discussed in this podcast, there is advice on where you can get help on the BBC website. We've included a link for that at the top of this page.
It's the greatest festival on earth, but if camping isn't for you or you want to relive your favourite moments, BBC Sounds has got it covered.
I got a feeling! This one's a special one just for you.
With live sets, music mixes and interviews across the weekend and available right up until the end of July. You can experience Glastonbury over and over again.
So the aim of the game tonight is to lose our voices.
Bring your voice up, boys!
Glastonbury 2019. Listen on BBC Sounds.
我会带一件这个小码的这个。
嗯，可以。
这个白色的靴
穿。行，挺好
的。我再给你带一多一件。
好。
白色的还是？带白色的。
白色的吧，好。
是吧？嗯。